filling bags with the loot they found. Moving on, I was impressed at their ability to take the wrong direction every single time. By the time they limped into the first floor boss room, they looked tired and sour. Taking out a week's worth of their anger on my poor bloody Bane, they sat to rest for a bit. I had dropped a holy pendant for them because I was impressed at their tenacity, if not their attitude. I think that I was jaded, being used to professionals at this point. They got up and were discussing where they should spend their money, so I decided that they needed a boost in the right direction. I dropped a few coppers on top of the stairs, making a loud clattering of falling coins. Of course, they came to investigate, and found the tunnel hidden around the bend. Seeing the stairway leading deeper, they became so excited that I almost felt bad for them. But really, does death only come for those who are wicked? Does it spare good people just because they are good or excited? I think not. Moving downward, they were on high guard, ready to be the first to explore these new, unknown depths. I directed a squad their way, getting ready to test out my new creations in battle. Seeing my bashers racing at them from the gloom, two of the humans crouched with shields to block their charge. I had the other bashers move back as the smashers raced forward, diving directly into the shields. The poor quality metal bent at the impact from my lovely bunnies, breaking the arms of the men foolish enough to attempt to block them, simultaneously knocking the men to their knees. The fallen humans screamed in pain for a moment, at least till the oppressors landed their attack on the heads placed perfectly for assault. The cleave ability came into play. A gust of forceful wind blasted into the humans' screaming mouths, shattering teeth and dislocating jaws moments before their skulls lost the whose cranium is harder challenge. With two of their five members dead in the first attack, the others tried to run. They did not get far before an impaler's horn pierced the spine of a fleeing archer. The smashers caught up to the remaining two, breaking their legs and giving the other bashers a chance to finish them off. Just like that, I gained enough essence that I broke directly into D-Rank 1. I whooped in joy. Wow! Those were even more effective than I thought they would be!
Surprise is a glorious tool, Cal.
Danny was nearly as excited as I was for my new rank. Remembering that there were others in the dungeon, I quickly worked to dissolve the corpses and acquire their items. It wouldn't do to have someone becoming alert to their impending doom, after all. I started fantasizing that, just maybe, I would finally get this group that showed up daily. I broke out of my reverie with a start, remembering that the mobs who helped kill a person would gain a portion of their essence. I moved the squad that had won their first battle into a hiding place to await lower-level groups. As an experiment, I would try to get them to evolve naturally. I needed to keep them separate, so as to ensure I would remember them, I'd call them Alpha Squad and give them a pleasure warren for when they weren't in combat. The first group of humans came to the first floor boss room just as the seed bloomed into a new monster, so they had to fight him. I wasn't sure if I should be happy or upset. Having them fight the boss gave me time to absorb the bodies below, wringing out every last drop of essence. But now I would need to resurrect the boss again. I vowed that the next time I was going to upgrade my dungeon, I would begin by replacing this useless boss. Disgusted with my weak mobs, I dropped the holy symbol I had retaken from the wiped group below, impatiently waiting for them to finish cultivating. I heard what I had been waiting for.
Look at that!
What is it, Dale? His name is Dale, huh? I'll call them Dale's group from now on. Dale was as excited as I'd hoped he would be.
Stairs leading down!
That must be why we didn't pass that group yet. I was getting worried for them. The blonde man seemed relieved.
Heh. Stay worried. A second level means stronger mobs, and that group was weak to begin with.
A harsh voice croaked at them from the cloth-wrapped man. Dale's group went downward, though at the landing paused, looking into the gloom.
Dale, are you cycling your essence for enhanced vision?
I am now, Dale sheepishly replied.
What do you see?
Looks like,
moving essence. I think earth, air, and... what is that blackish red?
Infernal.
A grim voice rang out, slowly drawing a sword. Dale gave a very unappreciative,
"Oh, that's bad, I take it."
"What else?"
the cloth-wrapped man prodded.
"The earth ahead looks...
wrong?
Thin, like the top layer of a puddle in winter,"
Dale notified them. The man asking questions nodded, though Dale wasn't looking his way.
"Good. Those are most likely traps. As an Earth Affinity cultivator, one of your most important responsibilities will lie in seeing or feeling traps like that. Others might see them, but I want you to call out every trap you see. Any you fail to catch in time will mean an hour of training with Josh at full speed."
The panic in Dale's eyes made me chuckle. I guess Josh wasn't gentle. Hopefully poor little Dale wouldn't have to worry for much longer. About anything.
"Those moving essence blobs are coming at us now!"
Dale called out.
"Likely mobs. Get ready, boys."
The blonde man holding daggers whooped. A fresh squad raced at them, moving quickly under my direction for a kill. The huge man in Dale's group moved forward with a tower shield, so I had both of the smashers ram it. Higher quality than the previous group, the man's shield held under the heavy attack, but the man himself grunted and moved back a few steps.
"Those suckers are heavy. Dodge 'em, if possible,"
he told the others in a strained conversational tone. I sent an oppressor to jump to the side of him, pushing off the wall to gain sideways momentum. Thinking he could easily block this smaller basher, the large man didn't focus as he should have. Therefore, he was knocked off balance as the cleaving wind sliced into both of his legs, opening up shallow cuts where the armor was jointed, even though the basher itself was stopped short. The other men rushed in, the cloth-wearing one moving exceedingly fast across the ground. I could feel a bit of essence interacting with the earth as he moved. This must be a movement skill. He seemed to vanish from his spot and appear behind the oppressor that had knocked the large man to the side. He punched with perfect form, creating a resounding crack. The perfectly aimed blow snapped my poor bunny's neck. It flopped to the floor, dead. While this impossibly fast man was distracted, I hoped, I sent my impaler at his back to try for an incapacitating blow. Mid-jump, an arrow landed in its eye. That was odd. I hadn't seen this group having an archer before. I risked quickly looking at their weapons, noticing that the person I had thought was using a staff this whole time was actually carrying a big-ass longbow. The draw weight on that must be massive for it to look like a metal-clad staff most of the time. The remaining oppressor and two smashers bounded toward the group of three people standing together, the two heavies flanking the lighter oppressor. The blonde-haired man raced right at them, a dagger in each hand. As the bashers leapt at him, he ignored defense, leaping higher than my bashers, accurately stabbing downward between the armored plates of the leftmost smasher, severing his spinal column. When the remaining bashers landed from their missed attack, a heavy spiked ball crushed the skull of my unarmored oppressor. Dale had moved forward without my noticing, the little brat! I may have been too focused on the jumping man while Dale landed his attack. The man with the bow? Staff? Stepped forward and slammed the metal shot end onto the last smasher, dazing it long enough for the dagger wielder to finish it off. Just like that, the battle was over. For now. Whew! That was intense. What do you think, Danny?
A good test of their abilities. I can already think of a few improvements we should try for the next batch,
Danny quickly reminded me.
Give them some good loot.
Fair enough. I had a few silver and copper coins rained down, as well as a few healing potions I had gotten from a well-funded but underpowered group recently. I threw in a holy symbol for good measure.
Well, I think that was worth it, Dale gasped,
excited at seeing silver glinting in the treasure. We have not even gotten to a room on this floor. Already the mobs were stronger than the boss on the previous level. Should we continue, or go warn the guild? The wise, unarmored person polled the group.
Hard to warn against that which we don't know.
The dagger user was placing the bodies of my bashers into a bag he had, which I felt was far too small to hold them all. I wanted a closer look, but his aura forced me to remain frustrated.
I suppose that's true. We continue.
Yes! They're still coming! I get another chance! I delightedly told Danny.
Yay you!
She cheered. Dale's group moved further in, Dale calling out the traps placed throughout the tunnel. He missed one. I was really looking forward to them boiling in acid when the cloth-covered human ruined my fun by stopping the group, pointing at the ceiling, and telling Dale he had an appointment with Josh when they were done. The big one, who I now assumed was Josh, was gleefully rubbing his hands together and dancing around just outside of the range of my trap. Twice, I tried to ambush them with squads while they were distracted with the low-powered original bashers. Sadly, each time they were defeated, though I was able to form a dent in Josh's gigantic tower shield. He grumbled like a thunderstorm when it happened, whining till the one they called Craig reminded him the dent could instead have been in his legs. As much as I wanted to eat them and their equipment, I was still very impressed by their teamwork, perception, and coordinated efforts. They moved on, clearing room after room, cultivating in each. After a bit, I noticed something odd about their behavior. They never took a wrong turn. I was confused as to how they found their way until I heard Dale ask the same question.
Well, here is a fork in the tunnel. Which way do you think we should go?
Craig looked at Dale, though it was obvious that Craig somehow knew the answer.
I'm not sure. I've never been here, Dale responded, a bit frustrated.
Neither have I, but I know we need to go to the right. Look at the quantity of essence swirling in the air. The more essence a path has, the more likely that it is the correct way to the boss room, Hans glibly informed him, throwing around precious information.
Oh, that makes sense.
Dale accepted this answer easily, and they started down the right-hand path.
Really? Danny, is there a way for me to get around that? I didn't realize they could just follow the stupid air,
I demanded crossly.
What a ridiculous thing for me to not notice. We'll have to think about it. Maybe we could open small tunnels like air vents to more evenly distribute it around the cave?
Danny responded evenly.
I could do that, I decided slowly, thinking about it. Actually, I'll do it tonight for sure. And I'll make a viewing hole in one of the really nasty traps that looks into the boss room just to taunt people. Heh heh heh. I chuckled darkly.
Oh, look, there's the final room. Oh no, squish.
The group was in the last room before the boss battle. I planned on making it a spectacular fight. A few more groups of adventurers were at different stages of the dungeon by this point. One was even approaching the stairs down to the second level. Worst case scenario, even if this didn't go as I wanted, I had another few chances to gain some essence. Dale's group entered the room, noting the silverwood tree and looking for the boss. It was rather dark in here, and the boss, with all of his granite armor, was well camouflaged with earth essence, making him look like part of the wall, unless moving. Instead of relaxing as I had hoped, the human snacks grouped closer together for defense. Dang. One of them tossed out a flask that broke on the floor, which started putting off a lot of light. Well, I'd be absorbing that pattern when we were done, thank you very much. Now illuminated, it was obvious that that giant mobile boulder was actually a mob, so he wasted no more time charging directly at them. I was nearly screaming with excitement as battle was joined. I had direct control of my boss. My mind merged with Rail's simplistic thoughts, so I was able to better control how this battle would progress. Josh boldly moved to block the charge at first, but a yell from Craig forced him to dodge at the last second. Now I had a lot of momentum. Rail was a big old boy, so when I missed, I couldn't exactly turn him on a copper. Crashing into the wall with the grinding of stone, I quickly redirected my boss to spring back to the attack. For a several hundred-pound stone-covered rabbit, I still moved pretty quickly. Instead of sprinting this time, I ran at them and leapt, gaining momentum and covering distance as only a rabbit could do. Plunging down like a meteorite intent on the extermination of all life, a shockwave shook the ground, knocking the armored members of the team off balance. The lightly armored men sprang into action to distract me whilst their comrades regained their footing. Hans ran at my boss, trying to wedge his daggers into the joints of my armor, but with a satisfying shattering of metal, the wedged daggers broke off as Rail moved, shaking off the weak attack easily. Ignoring the lone fighter, I began racing toward the off-balanced team members. Josh had no choice but to attempt blocking with his massive shield. He plunged the arrowhead-shaped base into the ground, leaned into it, and braced himself with a roar of challenge. Rail pounded the shield with a mighty blow, and it almost held. Sparking with released essence, the obviously enchanted shield was able to redirect some of the force back at Rail, slowing his charge and doing a bit of damage before the previously dented area gave way. A flash of lightning-like essence joined into the cacophony of sound when the metal plate shattered, Josh being thrown backward as his defenses were annihilated. Rail was effectively stopped for a heartbeat. With his momentary halt, the others took the chance to rain blows on him. The blunt staff and spiked Morningstar were whooshing through the air and dealing some damage, cracking the granite armor and transmitting force to the flesh beneath. The single dagger Hans retained simply glanced off the armor, as was intended, a useless tool in a fight like this. I laughed when Craig punched bare-knuckled at Rail, sure he would break his fist. My laughter was rudely cut off as the punch shattered the armor in a fist-sized area, and he struck Rail's shoulder, breaking that, too. "That guy is strong," I exclaimed in wonder. "Why the crap is he here?" Rail started moving again, limping a bit, but still very dangerous. Charging Dale, I was able to land a glancing blow to his oversized armor as he danced out of the way. Even this light hit made him fly to the ground. I heard a crunch from his ribs. The others ran at Rail, attempting to keep his attention as Dale recovered, but I sensed blood. I turned and got Dale in my sights and started charging. A few feet away, Rail slowed drastically. I could no longer see out of his left eye. Rail crashed to the ground, twitching. I was confused, still trying to order him to attack. Though he tried as hard as he could not follow my command. Rail soon stopped moving entirely. I changed my view to get a better picture of things, no longer looking from his eyes, noticing feathers where Rail's eye had been. An arrow had somehow made an impossible shot, piercing Rail's eye and brain. With a furious mutter, I dropped some loot. It had been a good and lightning fight. I'd get them eventually. I rained quite a bit of silver, the steel dagger I had been working on with the honing inscription, and a steel helmet with an inscription that boosted the protection granted against physical attacks. Also, as I absorbed Rail's pattern for the first time, I learned that the ability he had was called Avenger. I was a bit disappointed that I could not understand what it did, but it apparently held some requirement in order to be used.
"Dibs," Hans called, pointing at the dagger.
Steve collected the silver, while Josh tried on the new helmet. Dale was sitting against the wall, wheezing a bit, but breathing easier than I felt he should be with broken ribs.
"Grr. He wasn't even coughing up blood or anything."
"Let's take a look at you, shall we?"
Craig pulled off Dale's armor.
I really wished I had a mob in here for a sneak attack. No, no. I had to be a good sport about these sorts of things. They beat me fair and square. I didn't want to be a sore loser. Craig pushed on the bones that were broken, aligning them with his essence, while Dale gasped in pain at the movement.
Drink this. Craig put a recently acquired healing potion to Dale's lips, and within a few moments after drinking, Dale was breathing easier.
That is higher quality than I thought it would be, Craig muttered.
Of course it was. I had pride in what I produced, after all. I'm not some snake-oil-peddling herbologist. The original potion had indeed been barely potent, but I was able to make a much purer version when I had the pattern. While they were otherwise distracted, I ate the broken tower shield, then the remnants of the light potion. I had a chuckle at the strangled cry Josh made when he realized the halves of his old shield were gone.
"Damn it! I was still paying that off!" Josh raged, pounding the rock where his shield had been laying the last time he saw it.
They cultivated for a while, a cloud of swearing constantly flowing from Josh, then decided to head back. Another group was in the second tunnel of this floor, and my attention was now mostly on them. Surprising me, they had managed to take out a few squads without sustaining too much injury. They broke the leg of a smasher, so instead of letting them finish him off, I had it jump into an acid trap on the wall, killing it, but also releasing a flood of acid that drenched all but one of the small group. Screaming as their flesh boiled, melting in their armor, the remaining squad quickly ended them. Since he was distracted by the horror he was witnessing, a horn found the soft flesh of the one who had managed to avoid the spray. By the time Dale's group reached that point in the tunnel, all that remained was a series of acid scarring on the rock below, which I would soon fix. Dale's group never even noticed the recent demise, too focused on warning the other groups they found along their way, which I growled at.
I don't like them warning other people that are already in here. Gah! Danny, these guys are so frustrating, I pouted, angry that they were always one step ahead of me.
Danny suggested an easy solution.
How about we make an exit to the surface from the boss room? Easier for them to leave, and better for us to get them out of here so they can't tell people about new obstacles.
You think we can do that? I questioned. Because of the concentration of people above, the massive auras made it really hard for me to extend upward at all, to the point where we had decided it was a futile effort.
If we make it below ground and just push it upward, somewhere there isn't really a strong concentration of people, it should be doable. I'll go look for a suitable place tonight, okay?
Danny promised me as I calmed down and thought about it. I slowly agreed, not really wanting her to go anywhere dangerous.
If you promise to be careful, some really gigantic auras have been showing up recently, even stronger than the first group that cleared the dungeon.
Returning my attention to the people moving in my dungeon, I started picking off groups with my well-placed traps. None of the groups that came down into the second level were above F rank, so were easy pickings for my squads of mid-F ranked bashers. Beyond Dale's group, only one other returned without casualties, even then, only because they left after the first fight they had with the squad. The other cocky F-ranked groups provided me with enough essence in one day for me to move into the second rank of the D-series.
17. Dale and his group retraced their steps out of the dungeon, whooping in relief when the sun was again shining on them. The battles today had been hard, even when most of them were in the C ranks. They stopped at the accounting tent near the top of the stairs to log the money and treasure they had found. After paying the 25% guild tax, they were given a large bonus for handing over the bodies of the newly slain mobs.
"These are interesting," the clerk cooed. "The spotters will be happy to have something new to look at. We'll have a list of their extra vulnerable points ready for you tomorrow. Anything else to report?" Yes. Craig cleared his throat, knowing he was about to become very unpopular. He reached into his belt pouch, retrieving his guild badge, which marked him as having quite a bit of authority under Frank.
I'm declaring the second floor a D-ranked minimum. While these are mid-F-ranked mobs, the squads they move in easily push them into the danger level of the D-series.
The clerk nodded and quickly set out a document for him to sign. As a magically bound document, this would forcibly ensure that members of the guild below D-rank could not enter the second floor, forcing them to have a C or higher-ranked person with them who would have to give them special permission to enter. Since all members had sworn to follow the guild's rules, this may cause grumblings, but would be followed until a higher-ranked member revoked his decision. Unfortunately for a lot of the people trying to enter the dungeon, they were not guild members. This meant that they didn't need to follow guild rules, and they would push themselves to attempt the second level, especially since the rain of silver Dale's group had declared had made their eyes bulge with greed while drool formed on their chins.
And the new boss? Any information on it?
The clerk continued inquiring, writing everything down as a report bound for the guild leader.
A several-hundred-pound, stone-armor-covered bunny, Craig announced in a harsh tone.
The serious way he said bunny made a few people snort and chuckle. Even the stoic Josh had a smile playing about his lips. Craig blushed a bit, but grimaced and said nothing to stop them.
Heh. Ahem. Okay. Danger level.
The clerk tried to hide a chuckle.
Mid-D-ranking. Actual cultivation at F9, but its speed, armor, and weight make it very hard to damage. Blunt weapons are suggested. Few easy weak points. The eyes have armor surrounding them, and though the mouth is unarmored, stone hangs over from its nose. Another possible weak point, to cover the mouth unless it opens. Which it did only once, when it was in pain from a broken shoulder.
Craig succinctly stated. Dale was very impressed at the detail Craig provided. He hadn't seen the mouth open at all. Really, he hadn't thought about the possible points he should have been hitting. Mainly, he had swung for the head, trying to concuss it with the heavy spiked end of his weapon. His ribs still twanged a bit, and he felt that may have been avoided if he had been paying better attention. Lesson learned.
Loot dropped.
Craig continued his report.
After the first floor boss, roaming squads of improved bashers.
He pointed at the bodies on the table, dropped mid-quality of low-level healing potions, rarely a holy pendant which we'll most likely bring to Father Richard for his inspection, and a mixture of several copper and a few silver.
And the boss?
Craig spoke in a low tone to try and prevent others from overhearing.
Dropped a small amount of silver coinage, and two possibly inscribed items, including a helmet and a dagger. We will be getting them both checked for quality and safety before activating them.
Craig didn't speak quietly enough, and caused an explosion of noise, especially from the groups that were now forbidden to enter the second level. Rune-inscribed items were worth up to several hundred gold. Even a poor-quality one might be worth 50.
Make sure we get a copy of the spotter determination in value, and remember that if you sell them, 25% goes to the guild. You are allowed to use anything you earn or give it as a gift, but if it is sold, you will be compelled to pay the fee, so be sure you know that the person you give it to won't screw you over. If stolen, your debt is absolved unless it is recovered. Anything else?
The dry, bored tone continued as the now uninterested clerk looked at his notes. Craig nodded and spoke loudly, obviously for the benefit of the people listening in.
Just one thing. The traps in the lower level are far more advanced than the upper level. We did not set any off, but we came upon one that had been set off by another group. The floor and walls were scarred by some force. There was no sign that the unknown group survived. Stay safe, friends.
The crowd, which was on the verge of fury, calmed a bit. They all knew this most likely meant that group was dead, as there wasn't ever a body to recover if a team fell in a dungeon.
Maybe it was for the best that they stayed out of the lower level, and Craig was not just trying to hoard all of the good loot.
Ah, by the way...
Hans turned toward the attentive crowd. In the first room right there, he pointed at the entrance below them, there is a massive iron vein along the wall. Good way to earn some cash while you cultivate. An explosion of motion followed as those too weak to reach the second floor raced to buy picks from an overjoyed entrepreneur who had set up a small kiosk nearby. His inflated prices, suddenly not an issue, he quickly made enough to later find Dale and ask for some land to set up shop. Dale agreed and assigned him a plot of land, for a percentage and a discount, of course. Dale. While the masses were distracted, Dale's group went to have lunch. After a meal that was barely better than the dirt it was grown in, they cultivated in consideration of Dale's sore ribs, promising him they would spar after dinner. Dale readily agreed. Today showed just how poor his combat readiness was. In comfortable silence, each settled in to cultivate again, pretending that it was not because he was bored of cultivating, having spent nearly 5 hours passively and actively cultivating in the essence-rich area underground. Craig determined that Dale had enough essence built up to open another meridian.
Now, the only reason you are ready right now is that you open the first of the paired set. You opened the Yin Heart Meridian, so the Yang Lower Intestine Meridian will be much easier to open. You don't have the essence to open one in a new set, so make sure to listen to my direction, Craig directed in a serious manner.
Dale nodded, preparing himself. As before, he sank into his center and pulled a thin stream of essence from the spinning key. Moving it along the wall, he searched for the small holes he now knew existed. Craig stopped him a few times until he apparently approached the correct one. It was nowhere near the first, and didn't seem to go to the lower intestine. His brow furrowed in confusion. Dale still did as he was told. Craig hadn't been wrong yet, after all. Dale fed the essence into the hole, and it was again sucked from his control. The essence left his center, somehow splitting and moving directly into his little finger on each arm. On both, it crossed the wrist and ran upwards along the opposite side of the forearm, as the heart meridian did, until it reached the back of Dale's shoulder, where it ended at the uppermost part of the back, or the bottom of his neck. At this position, after creating weavings along its route, it traveled along the skin across his neck and cheek until it reached the outer corner of his eye, finally ending in his ear before somehow reconnecting into his center and joining the spiral from another small hole. Everything sounded a bit fuzzy, so he opened his eyes and blinked away tears. Wiping them from his cheek, he saw that it was actually blood dripping from his eyes. Wiping at his ears, the fuzziness vanished as drops of blood were wiped away there as well. Surprised blood wasn't coming out of his skin at this point, he asked why he was bleeding. Had he been hit while he was so focused? What should he expect now? Craig waved at him to try and calm him down and slow the flow of questions.
As your meridians are opened, they are also cleaned. The impurities in your system that are forced away have to go somewhere, after all. That blood is helping the filth to be washed out, that is all. You aren't damaged. Actually, you are now far healthier.
I see,
Dale murmured, thinking out loud about the incredibly foul poop he had taken after his heart meridian had opened. Now it made sense why it had connected to his intestines. It was depositing impurities.
I bet you do, Hans called, interrupting Dale's reminiscence. Your vision should clear up. Any issues you had before are going to be gone. Oh, by the way...
Ha!
Dale gasped as Hans shouted next to his head, his hands clapping to his ears with a wet smack of blood.
Yup, looks like your hearing is improving as well, Hans laughed, grinning maliciously.
mean?
Dale gasped. Heh, was the only apology he got.
Get ready for a few sleepless nights, kiddo, Steve rumbled fondly. You are going to wake up to a herder on the next mountain farting tonight.
The men laughed uproariously at this.
I know the one. He's been eating too much roughage, if you ask me. He needs to add some fruit to his diet,
Josh sounded off. The laughter only increased at this comment. They calmed down after a bit, spirits much lightened. Craig continued the lesson.
As they say, eyesight and hearing will be better for you and should stay that way. It is called the lower intestine meridian because as food enters your intestines, your body will now purify the food you eat much more efficiently, and you will even be using it for essence gathering, as some of the extra will have the essence drawn out of it.
Oh, that's handy, I guess.
Dale was far more excited about the improved senses, though.
Your thoughts are gonna smell like death because of it, Hans chimed in. You're lucky you have your own tent, Steve crowed.
Craig sighed with a smile. No manners, any of you. All right, since we seem to have a surplus of energy, how about you start your punishment training with Josh, Dale? You did miss that trap.
Josh jumped to his feet, face lighting up.
He had forgotten that he got to beat up Dale by himself for an hour.
By evening, Dale was exhausted.
With the intense day that he had, sleep was only seconds away when he finally got to bed. Enhanced senses or no, that night, he slept like the dead. 18. The last group of people had finally left, making it far easier to alter myself. Those human auras inside of me had a nasty habit of making it difficult for me to directly affect things. I added openings from each cave to another and let them level out the essence in the air. It was slow, but I figured by morning you couldn't cheat my empty rooms anymore. Not the way they had been, anyway. Just to be safe, I reconfigured the tunnels so that people couldn't just retrace their steps. Next, Danny flew out and looked around for a while. She came back with very interesting news. There was a giant sheet of quartz above us, not quite directly up, but nearly so from the boss room. With her directing me, I moved the rooms above me out of the way, creating a cylinder of empty space up to the sheet while holding the integrity of the dungeon intact. Quite a lot of work, but far easier at my new ranking. From my gem, I had perfect vision in line of sight, but had mostly only seen the hole I was in and so used my influence to see. The downside was that I could only see as far as that influence extended. Now, for the first time in my life, I looked up and saw the stars.
Wow, that is so beautiful. I cannot believe people can go up and see them every night,
I articulated with a hint of jealousy, peering beyond the silverwood tree above me and out into the stars.
Most people don't bother,
Danny quietly voiced, also enjoying the view. The sheet of quartz above us acted as a giant telescope, letting us see further and more clearly than usual. It was especially beautiful when the moon came into view. It seemed huge. Why is that? I asked quizzically, disturbed that people actually ignored this beautiful scenery. She seemed to match my disappointment in others.
Most people tend to only look at, or think about, things that have value to them at that moment. They look so hard at what they want that they drown out the beautiful things that would give them hope, or allow them to look beyond their small lives. They lose sight of living, trying to get to the next goal. The next important thing. They forget that everything is important, that the little moments of happiness added up overwhelm the greatness of the few large moments. Like making a friend smile, or making it to the 218th page of a book. Sometimes, it isn't about finishing your objective. It is about enjoying yourself on the way there.
She focused on me.
That's why I have so much fun here, Cal. You put details into the little things, and even when you are beat, you reward those who did well. You care more about being amazing than you do winning.
Thank you, Danny, I choked out, feeling overwhelmed with joy at having such a good friend. Really, you mean a lot to me as well. If there is ever anything I can do for you, anything you really need, I hope you know that I will do it for you.
Well, I suppose the first thing you could do is build an exit!
She shouted, breaking the sober mood and startling me badly.
We both laughed at how shocked I was.
That I can do. Together, we designed a gazebo-like structure made of thick granite. For the rest of the night, I carved a series of large runes into the stone, about an inch under the surface. All of them linked together so that I could use a single power source to activate them. When I finished it, dawn was only an hour away. I created a spiral staircase under the gazebo, building all of this in a small area just off of my boss room. I opened the ground up to the surface as far as I could reach, about 3 feet below the surface, and raised the gazebo on the stairs I was creating underneath of it. As it rose, it spun with the creation of the spiral under it. When it finally reached the edge of my influence, the top of my first building punched through the loosely packed dirt at the top. I could see the gazebo break into the surface through the clear quartz nearly 100 feet above. When it shuddered to a stop, I connected its corruption stone to the inscribed runes and felt the gazebo become even harder. The energy sluggishly filled it, glowing with a harsh purple-brown color. I was pleased to feel that the runes were perfect. The door out could only be opened from the inside. Anyone attempting to re-enter would be crushed like a bug, or find themselves in a stairwell that had no exit at the bottom when I dropped a wall in the way and let them slowly suffocate. Good times. Well, for me. Catching my attention as I was looking up, I realized the silverwood tree had seemed to enjoy the new light coming in. A few leaves had unfurled over the night as the moonlight bathed us. What was that? There was a person, wait, two people directly above me. I was suddenly worried looking at the quartz above us. That could be broken, couldn't it? I was at the edge of my influence, but if I strained, pushing really hard, I was still able to make molecule-thin patterns in the sheet with acid, slowly widening them until they were useful runes. Since quartz was just stone, I planned on hooking it to a corruption stone. My plan failed in the most wondrous way. When I finished the inscription, a bright golden light flashed through the runes. I looked at it carefully. The whole thing had been filled with celestial energy. On closer inspection, Danny informed me that the entire 3-foot-thick quartz was just stuffed full of celestial energy.
Somehow, someone made this into celestial glass,
she gibbered, awed at the beautiful light we could see when we focused. There were no visible markings on it, even though the runes I had placed were obviously active. Odd. I couldn't focus on this right now, though I truly wanted to solve this mystery. You see, dawn had come. Another first for me. For the first time in my life, I was able to watch the sunrise. Even better, I got to do so with my best friend, the only being I loved as much as myself.
Dale. A soft grinding noise slowly roused Dale, his newly enhanced ears throbbing at the new sound. Rubbing sleep from his eyes, he walked out of his tent and meandered around as he looked for the source. It seemed to be coming from the lot the church would be built on. Dale wondered if some earth mages had arrived to help build it. He wandered over, planning to see how it was done, and noticed a gazebo.
Earth mages?
Father Richard?
Dale called. When no one responded, he went over to inspect their work. It was a single piece of granite that had no seams as far as he could tell.
They must not have put the door in. He decided to look at it with his essence sight ability, which was much easier to use now that the new meridian was open in the corner of his eye. Inspecting the work, he could only see its natural essence and was impressed by the control the mage who made this had used. Normally, there was overflow which had a flavor to it known as the mage's signature. The smaller the signature, the better control the mage had, the more the work was worth, because it would interfere less with runes added on later. Looking closer, he saw beautiful rune-scripted patterns cut inside the stone itself.
"That is so cool. I need to get this guy to teach me," he thought, very excited to meet this master mage when he returned.
About to turn away, he saw what almost looked like earth essence starting to follow the loops and whirls of the internal pattern. Entranced, he watched as the slow-moving substance filled the pattern. When it reached the last open spot, the stone suddenly pulsed, seeming to tighten and grow darker. Some loose sand shook off, and he was showered with dirt. The rock was suddenly opaque to him, the beautiful pattern no longer visible.
It looked exactly like the slab of stone over the entrance had, as a matter of fact.
Now nervous, Dale turned to run and tell someone about this when Father Richard walked up with a,
"Morning, lad! Would you look at that?" he whistled. "Is this whole piece a single slab of granite?"
"Father, this is, if I am correct, cursed earth," Dale released in a rush.
I think you are indeed correct." Richard frowned a bit. "It looks a lot like that blockage did over the entrance to the dungeon. Come look at the quartz with me over here. It came awfully close to it. I hope it didn't do any damage."
The look of nervousness on his face convinced Dale to help before informing the guild. They moved to check for any damage to the quartz. Father Richard frowned as he saw scratches along the bottom of the slab with the sparse pre-dawn light. Just before the sun crested the ridge to signal the start of a new day, the entire slab shone brilliantly, as if it, and not the sun, was the herald of the morning.
"Ah!"
both of them yelled, clutching at their eyes. Blinking rapidly in an attempt to clear the spots dancing in their vision, they stumbled about in pain, Father Richard swearing in a very non-priestly way. Silence, followed by a gasp, escaped Father Richard. Dale looked over with swimming vision to see him looking down with wonder in his expression. True sunrise had arrived. Dale looked directly down to see the boss room he had fought in yesterday, as if it were only a few feet below.
"What?"
Dale joined in the gasping.
"That's the Silverwood tree," Father Richard pointed.
"Looks like it. But how can we see this? It has to be so far underground," Dale exclaimed.
Father Richard didn't answer, instead looking at the quartz again, looking for the scratches that had been there. After a few moments, he flopped down into a kneeling position.
"It's a miracle," he murmured, touching the smooth surface.
"Father?"
"Dale, the whole thing. It's been enchanted. No, those are runes. It's been inscribed."
Tears of joy sprang to Father Richard's eyes as he read the inscription that Dale could not even see.
"It's the church's best essence level rune. Protection, increased celestial energy, and dissolving of infernal bonds."
He was freely weeping now.
"It's a miracle."
"I can't see the rune. The essence in the way is too thick," Dale ashamedly mentioned, disappointed in his ability.
A flash of insight crossed his mind.
"Father, is it the same inscription as this?"
He pulled out the pendant he was wearing, which was filled with essence of no particular elemental affiliation. The father's eyes locked onto it, and his expression changed to almost anger.
"Where did you get this?"
"It was a drop in the dungeon, from the boss of the first floor and the mobs beyond.
Dale informed him nervously.
Ah, sorry, I didn't mean to worry you.
This is indeed the same rune, but as I said, it is one of the most powerful essence-level inscriptions we have. I was just surprised to see it out of the hands of a cleric.
Would you let me see it?
Richard politely asked. Of course, Father. Dale handed it over, glad he wasn't in trouble with this powerful man.
Yes, it is the same, Richard spoke, almost to himself. Useless, though.
Useless? Dale was rather disappointed to hear that. Several people around the area had them for good luck.
Yes, though filled with essence, only celestial type is able to activate the full inscription. Other types may be able to use the other parts, like this physical protection. I haven't looked into it.
Father Richard muttered, tracing the pattern. He looked at it again, frowning.
Can I try something on this?
Sure, Dale shrugged. It was useless anyway. Father Richard smiled, held the pendant, and started saying a short prayer. The first words had barely left his mouth when the pendant glowed with light, obviously activating.
Wondrous! Richard exclaimed, eyes shining. You say this is a drop that is fairly common in the dungeon?
Yes. The first boss sometimes does drop it, but we got three yesterday on the second level, Dale bragged.
I can activate them. Look!
Father Richard held up the pendant.
The essence it contained has taken on celestial affinity.
Great!
Dale was enthusiastic, yet still somewhat confused.
Here, lad. Would you like me to bind this to you? You are its rightful owner, after all,
Father Richard offered. I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean, Father. Dale stalled, nervous for an unknown reason.
Oh, it isn't dangerous. If you place a small thread of essence to a certain place on your item's rune, it will only activate for you if you are the first to do so. Many don't, because then the resale value drops quite a bit, and you can still activate the rune like normal. But someone else could get a hold of it and bind it, rendering it useless to you,
Father Richard explained.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to learn how, right?
Dale grinned. He loved learning new things.
Right, Father Richard assured.
Okay, let's do it,
Dale affirmed, excited for the new knowledge.
Since you still use essence, your power does not extend far past your physical body. Basically, you still need to have contact with the place you want to put essence into, like your armor, since it is enchanted, has the power deposit placement on the inside against your skin, and your weapon has it on the grip. You can see it if you just look.
Dale didn't inform him that he didn't know how to activate his gear. He now planned to practice, though. Continuing his lecture,
look here. Every place you input energy is the same glyph, or a variant of it. That is the standard activation site. Here,
he pointed to another spot,
is the binding glyph of the rune. Again, it looks similar across all the runes I have ever seen. Try to put a tiny, tiny amount of essence into it.
Taking the pendant back, Dale concentrated on pulling essence to his fingertip. Having done this from his eyes often now, it was easy to do only on his little finger, close to the meridian. Getting a mirthful look from Father Richard when he poked the glyph with his pinky, he felt a tiny tug from the pendant, and it glowed softly for a moment.
Good job, you did it on your first try, Father Richard praised. You are the first non-cleric I know to have this particular active protection. Now, can you feel where it is?
He took and moved the pendant back and forth, and Dale felt as though he was being pulled in the same direction.
You'll always be able to find it, if it doesn't break.
Very cool,
Dale enthused, eyes shining.
Remember to activate it when you need it. Just having it does nothing, Father Richard professed. By the way, I'll be letting people know that I'll pay 50 silver for each of those, so pass it on.
Aren't ruined items worth gold usually? Dale looked at the cheap priest.
Only if they are able to be activated, Father Richard responded with a cheeky wink.
Sneaky old man, Dale very quietly muttered.
What was that? Father Richard growled.
Nothing.
As Father Richard watched Dale walk away, he thought about the now enchanted quartz and the ruined pendants. Maybe this post wasn't a punishment. He dared to hope. 19. Dale moved away to meet up with his comrades. Following his nose, he quickly found them eating breakfast. Trying to tell his story, he was shouted down by the group, banished until he was fully armored, since he was under strict orders to wear his gear at all times. They would hear no argument, yelling over his voice every time he tried to explain himself. Exceedingly frustrated, Dale went back to his tent to get geared up and found a masked man rummaging through his things.
Hey! Dale shouted in surprise. What the hell are you doing?
The startled man looked up, eyes narrowing. His information had specifically said that Dale would be in the dungeon by now. Oh well. He was probably going to have to kill him later anyway. The masked man pulled out a long knife and lunged at Dale. His reactions trained from months of battle, Dale jumped to the side, barely avoiding a slash at his throat. His mind whirled with options, but he was without weapons or armor, so he froze up, earning a brutal kick to his knee. Knocking Dale to the ground, the masked man raised his dagger to deliver a coup de grace, ending his existence. Panicking, Dale screamed the first thing that came to mind.
Get off my mountain!
Dale ordered with a frantic squeal. Mid-swing, the man turned and started jerkily walking away, his dagger flying from his hand at the unexpected and unwanted movement. Dale, relieved, shouted after the angry and confused man.
To anyone who sent you, anyone who was sent by the same person, and anyone who knows what you were doing, leave and never come back.
Dale had no idea if that would work, but he figured it was a good idea to at least try to get rid of other potential problems. There was now nothing he could do than just to watch the would-be assassin make his escape, so he stood up, shaking with reaction. Dale glared as he watched the man go. He was sprinting away now, obviously trying to outrun anyone Dale might send to find him. Dale rushed to put on his armor, not feeling safe until he had every piece properly equipped. He then moved to find his group and tell them the events of his morning. At his rushed words about the assassin, they pulled him along to the guildmaster, making him repeat his story. Frank tried to be sympathetic, but it was obvious he was preoccupied and not actually worried.
There. He was probably a thief that panicked when you showed up. It sounds like he didn't try too hard to kill you if he just ran off.
No, I ordered him off the mountain right before he could kill me, Dale stated passionately. He had me dead to rights. It was the only thing I could think of. I was about to die, Frank.
That was smart. Good work thinking on your toes, kid, Hans soothingly stated, slapping Dale comfortingly on the back.
Frank shook his head and sighed in exasperation as he looked over another requisition form.
Still, while I am sorry it happened, there really isn't much to be done. He obviously wasn't in the guild if he tried to attack you, so I have no legal right to hunt him down. Actually,
Frank paused and mused a moment.
Banishing him was a solid punishment. After all, he is now several hundred miles from any real civilization with no food, water, or equipment.
Dale was taken aback. He hadn't really thought making people leave would have such deadly consequences for them. Living off the land was easy around here, wasn't it? His family had done so for generations. Calming down a bit, Dale recited the rest of his story. Some other things happened this morning as well. he relayed his conversation with Father Richard, telling them of the cursed earth gazebo and the massive rune script that had appeared on the quartz. Rune script being the proper term for many runes that interlock together to form a larger rune, of course.